We have our dear Senator Jeff Wilson on the horn with us. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Johnny, and good morning, Grays Harbor area.
I really appreciate you taking the time because, you know, there's the session going on now, and it's, like, intense. And I got to say, I'm a little kind of bummed out because I was looking at the bills that have introduced, you came up with, like the roadside safety measures. Well, actually, that one actually passed everything, it looks like. But ID to vote. You have the Pick It Up Washington Litter Control Program, establishing performance requirements of homelessness service providers. You have all these great bills. Didn't even make it to committee.
You know, that's kind of the way things in Olympia play out. But the good news is, this is never the end, because part of my job in working for the 19th District is to not quit. In other words, these bills that were very practical, very common sense, what I do is I regroup, I may redirect, but they're all coming back. Every one of them I will represent next year, maybe with a different message, and hopefully then I can, you know, get it a little further along. It seems sometimes the simplest of bills you would think are slam dunks.
Right.
They turn out to be, maybe they're questioned more because they make just too darn much good sense. And who on earth would allow a bill in Olympia that makes common sense the rule of the game, of course, be the status quo? And I'm joking on that, of course, because I have had success with other bills. But you hit it on the spot, though. These were very important bills to everybody, and I will bring them back. It's the line I'm taking from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll be back. Get to the choppa. So, Senate Bill 5040, requiring notation on enhanced documents that the holder of the document has demonstrated the citizenship requirement sufficient to register to vote. Is that just requiring an ID to vote, or is it different?
Well, this ID would have provided anything that you really could, you would need it for, and then that can include voting. All it really said, that bill said, is if you get your enhanced Washington ID card, and that's kind of along lines with the federal requirement that says you're going to have that. We have until 2025 in the state to finish it up. Those people that get that enhanced Washington state license, they go through a series of additional checks in order to get that ID, and one of them is, a residential status and a number of things, and so they're vetted very heavily. And I thought, well, there's nothing left to vet except let's announce that those people are also registered voters of the state, and that card could be used as a voter ID, or besides just an enhanced ID. It was like using the same ID, but for multiple function purposes. And it just seemed a little too complicated, I guess.
Or racist. Oh, no, okay. Senate Bill 5222, the Pick It Up Washington Litter Control Program.
You know, all you got to do is open up your eyes and go pretty much anywhere in Washington State, most of the communities, and look alongside our roads, our roadways, our highways, our state routes, our county roads. And you'll see that the tsunami of garbage, trash, litter, it seems to be increasing. So I, of course, dropped a bill that required us to kind of have a campaign that would join us together as citizens of Washington State. And it would be called Pick It Up Washington, where Ecology would supply the bags and they would pick up the garbage. If we wanted to volunteer, or the state agency known as Ecology wanted to get, say, more involved for Ecology, we would have taken an aggressive approach to clean up the sides of our roads, Johnny. I mean, it's a blight when you look out the window. I know you've seen it. Your listeners have seen it. You can't avoid it. There is garbage on the side of the road, and it's to the point where, well, we look like a third world country at times.
You know, that reminds me, I recently took a trip to Mount Tahoma National Cemetery to give a eulogy for a veteran family member, and my mom, who hadn't been on I-5 in years, I'm taking her with me, and she's looking, and she's like, John, where did all this garbage come from? It never looked like this. And I'm like, yep, sorry, Mom. It's the way it is now.
Well, you know, when our moms tell us the stories, Johnny, of the good old days, I think when it comes to this, they're right. There wasn't much garbage as much when we were growing up. It's gotten worse. I don't know what it is, but it's a pretty easy problem to fix. You simply pick it up. thus the bill. Pick it up, Washington.
Right. Didn't make it to committee.
That's right. Well, it made it into committee. It didn't make it out of committee. So I
got
to give a little speech or two on it, but it's as if my speech was wadded up and thrown alongside the road with all the other garbage, put it that way.
Right. Didn't make it out of committee. I stand corrected. Senate Bill 5224, establishing performance requirements of homelessness service providers. Do we not have any oversight in our homelessness service providers?
Well, you have some oversight. And what that bill does was it basically asked for more accountability with local communities that have developed homeless housing type plans or homeless plans as required by the Department of Commerce. What you do is you start to set benchmarks and you measure the result of what you said you wanted to do in the plan. And if you didn't make those results, this bill would have allowed you to, say, do corrective actions. If you didn't reach a goal, the plan said, well, now you have to plan how you gonna fix it. And it can go all the way up to just changing the plan or modifying it to looking at those, for example, that are in the business of it and saying, wait a minute, you said you were gonna do this, we audited you, and you didn't. You could even start to remove recommending not to fund those organizations. And I didn't think of this, Johnny. This came from the state auditor's office did an audit, and there's where I took the information from a bill and says, well, why aren't we starting to follow the dollar that we throw at homelessness, and why don't we make sure that we're being effective with those dollars? Because if you're not, you better regroup, and if it turns out to be a waste of money, you need to start cutting people off. That's not people as in individuals, but organizations that are supposed to help you get to what your community wants in your plan.
Did it make it out of committee?
It did not make it out of committee. It made it into committee, and believe it or not, a few government agencies, without naming names, actually threw a tizzy fit. They didn't like the bill. Actually, they were afraid maybe it would have caused more work. What I was looking for was accountability, transparency, where local communities can select on their own an audit mechanism to see if, well, they're getting their money's worth. And gosh, Johnny, you'd have thought that, again, I'd broken somebody's window.
We're talking with Senator Jeff Wilson, the 19th District. He's up in Olympia battling it out with the legislature, the House of Representatives, the Senate. They're ping-ponging bills back and forth, at least the ones that, advance. Let's see, Senate Bill 5279, expanding a sales and use tax deferral program for affordable housing to include structures initially used as temporary employee housing for employees constructing warehouses, distribution centers, and other large facilities. Can you dumb it down for me?
Of course, it really says, listen, if you would like, if you're a big company or a business and you want to build something and you want to provide employee housing, what this really does is it says, listen, please build housing for your workers. It's an incentive. You get a sales tax exemption on some of the building means for so many years. But the catch is, when you're done with that housing, it also has to be able to be available for people in the local community to also rent or utilize. I mean, let's face it, we do have a shortage of rental houses and houses to buy. So if a big company comes to town and they want to build something for a couple of years, we know that those workers, no disrespect to them, the transient type workers, they're going to need a place to stay. And so they only need it for a short term. But yet, when they do rent it, they take it off the market from somebody that, say, may live there consistently in the community to be able to rent or to buy. and it adds to the shortage of a space. This just says, listen, all right, you businesses, you want to build a warehouse, you want to build employee housing, please do. Build it right, but also make sure that when you're done with it or during that, that you will also open up additional space for those that need housing.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, you know, simplifying it for me. Senate Bill 5414, providing voters with information regarding elections law violations within the voter's pamphlet. Now, does this mean, like, in our voter book there, it would list election law violations next to the candidate that have been found to have committed that?
Well, now we weren't going to take it to a specific politician. What this was is someplace in the voter's pamphlet statement, there was supposed to be a paragraph. And the paragraph is basically says, look, if you cheat, lie, or steal when it comes to voting in Washington State, it's against the law. And this is the consequence. It's the same kind of label that you would see a little bit like a warning label, like maybe you'd see on the side of a pack of cigarettes by the Surgeon General, except this one deals with voting. It was to send out a message to everybody in Washington State, vote, but please vote legally. And that's all it was. And again, you'd have thought that I'd unleash some horrific bill. The bill was just one page. It had a total cost of only $10,000 to implement statewide, so that warning statement would be a reminder to all voters to vote legally. And yet, again, it just doesn't seem to be of importance.
But now, since that won't be on there, you know, if someone gets caught doing something wrong, they say, well, I didn't know. I mean, it wasn't on the voter pamphlet, so, hey.
Absolutely. I didn't know the speed limit was only 70 as you pulled me over for going 100. That's why we have signs. You're supposed to know that limit. And the same thing with the violations notice in the voter's pamphlet. Now, I'm proud to say that some local, believe it or not, and even in Lewis County, there are some local auditors thought my language was pretty cool, and they voluntarily put it in their local voter's pamphlet statement.
Nice. And did it make it out of committee?
It did, but it didn't make it to the Senate floor, and there was nobody that testified against it, not a one. And you'd think that, well, it's a slam dunk, but for some reason, you know, the powers that be did not choose to advance it. Heaven forbid we would tell somebody there's a consequence for bad actions and don't cheat or lie or steal when you vote.
Right. Senate Bill 5422, providing access to behavioral health services to kids using licensed clinicians within schools, co-located within the school?
Absolutely. This one, you know, we have a large health care system in our state. There's a health care authority, and then they contract out with about six companies called managed care organizations, and those organizations are supposed to provide basic Medicare type needs for, well, whether it's behavioral health or otherwise. But what we found during the COVID is our school kids were getting even further stressed out. They were going under further trauma from, for whatever reason, during the COVID. So there was a heightened need for behavioral treatment, somebody to talk to, maybe a professional. And that insurance, what the bill said is, listen, all right, you schools, kids go to schools. And if they have a behavioral issue, let's make sure they have a resource to go to and make this part of the coverage that's already existed. So it says local school districts, rather than use your money, your school district money for this to bring in behavioral specialists, let's use the health care authority's managed care system. And, you know, the times are tough for both children and adults, Johnny. You know, sometimes we need that extra assistance. This was a way to provide it in schools.
And did it make it out of committee? Yeah. Oh, what?
No, that one, they didn't even want to give that one a hearing. That was one of the rare bills I had that didn't even get a discussion in committee.
You know, we have railroad infrastructure here. We have freight coming in and out here in Grace Harbor, you're well aware of our situation, especially around the Walmart area and that railroad track running through it. Your Senate Bill 5494, providing incentives to improve freight railroad infrastructure, would that have affected us here in Grace Harbor in that situation there?
Oh, not only will it affect it, it's still going to. When I dropped that freight infrastructure bill, it was designed to help, say, smaller railroads, Class 2, 3, short lines, port railroads, so that when they do their upgrades, we can give them a little break, which is to exempt from, say, the sales tax. We want them to spend more money on better rail so they can go through town safer, but maybe quicker. They don't hold up all those traffic lights and stuff. And I'm proud to say that when the bill was put together, I had friends in the House of Representatives drop an identical companion bill. And so my version is not going to survive, but the House of Representatives copy of that bill is going to come over to the Senate floor. So we kind of doubled down on strategy, and it worked. And so we will be voting on the Senate floor for that bill here, I would imagine, in a week or so.
Okay, fingers crossed, yeah?
Yeah, well, also railroad crossings crossed because the traffic jam. We got the Aberdeen Rail Separation Project is obviously been my number one transportation priority for all of Grace Harbor. It's not been a secret. And I'm hoping that we can get to that day very quickly in our careers here to get an overpass built through there.
So if the legislative website there is all up to date, it looks like Senate Bill 5542 passed, and that's preventing the destruction of electric vehicle charging equipment?
Oh, absolutely. It's just, you know, all those long, skinny cords that you see where electric cars plug in, those giant extension cords. Well, they're made up of precious metals, copper, aluminum, and that now is making it attractive for bad actors to steal them. And the it removes the incentive that, look, if you do steal something like that and you take it to a metal recycler, they're going to question you, and they're going to say, where'd you get that cord? Because this is now going to be listed as metal property or commercial metal, and that triggers a series of, well, I'm just not going to pay you cash for it on the spot. I got to get ahead of the crime before it really accelerates on that, Johnny.
Well, it seems like if it has to do with EVs or anything with that new Green Deal, they're all for it, right? Boom.
Yeah, they're all for it, but you create a market of, well, wait a minute, there could be some business in crime. It's like catalytic converters. The catalytic converter makes your tailpipe breathe a little cleaner, but inside the catalytic converter are palladium, rhodium, and platinum. And these precious metals are worth, well, rhodium is worth five times more than gold. So there's an incentive for people, well,
right,
for crime to pay.
We have about a minute left until our bottom of the hour break. The Nacelle Youth Camp property, that's been a big issue in Pacific County, transferring ownership to the Chinook Indian Nation, Senate Bill 5556. Where are we at?
Well, where we're at on that is that's going to come back next year, but I have operating budget provisos to make sure that that place stays in what's called warm closure. It's going to be maintained in good shape. And the best part, Johnny, the best part is my proviso says we're going to form a task force, a committee, and this decision on what to do with that facility is going to get decided on a local basis instead of Olympia telling Nacelle what to do. We're going to put a committee together and make recommendations and control, I guess, our Nacelle Youth Camp future. That was my big home run on the Nacelle Youth Camp transfer.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense to me why that even just the whole place needed to be messed with in the first place. You know what I mean?
That was a decision made at policy level, at the governor letter level, not the senator level. The
right.
Governor was did not want that.
We have Senator Jeff Wilson calling in from Olympia. We're going over just the legislative session. You were here Saturday, correct?
Yes, I was. On the 25th, I held a town hall in Aberdeen. And even the week before that, the 7 days before last Saturday, I also was in Aberdeen. And as I come to town and visit with constituents and hold meetings, and Then, of course, I'm noted for also walking around the community. So I spend time walking through different neighborhoods and just kind of observing what's out there.
What did you see?
Well, and the last two trips I've made, you know, I ended up eventually down, let's say, by the train tracks and the drawbridge, I'll call it. And you know, those are some of the communities that have gotten a lot of attention, and let's say the word homeless. And as it should, as I viewed the homeless encampment alongside the rail tracks there, you know, the tents, there were a lot of new tents. And that's good. You don't want anybody sleeping out in the rain. But what you do notice is the voluminous amounts of what I'm going to say dangerous discarded litter. Not just your average trash. When I was there 2 weeks ago and then Saturday, each time I noticed that there were hundreds, absolutely hundreds of discarded syringes strewn about, just laying underneath the train tracks around the corner and those areas down there off of State Street. I believe it's in H. And what you find is it looks like a war zone of discarded trash, but also the predominant amounts of needles there, used syringes, Johnny. And now, these things aren't to be played with. I've had lots of training, and there's more needles than I could have ever picked up. And this is something I encourage communities to act on. Despite the conditions of, say, drug addiction and all the challenges, you're still not supposed to be able to have to step over needles just to walk on a gravel path next to the train tracks. Not on the train tracks, of course. But it's a heartbreaker because you mean well, and I observed people that would show up and provide meals for those that, of course, need that service. But I didn't see any garbage pickup. I didn't see any engagement on, you know, community services available, whether there's treatment available or local housing. And it breaks my heart. And there's where a lot of people jump to the conclusion of enabling. And at times I can't blame them, because what I've seen the last couple times was completely unacceptable. It is a war zone of discarded drug paraphernalia. And I'm not talking about marijuana here, Johnny. I'm talking about Schedule One type drugs. It's obvious that part of town has a serious drug problem.
Well, I think you may have lit a spark under some folks, because I believe Casey Ann Morrison, one of our council members, was out over the weekend trying to clean up some of the mess with some friends. So, you know, some are trying, you know?
You know, and I commend the citizens. I, too, do that. I've been picking up litter and debris and used drug paraphernalia for at least 8 years routinely. And that does include in Aberdeen, especially behind a big store there along the river on the trail by the Compass. My problem, though, at this point is there's not enough concerned citizens that can put a lot of dent into this. This problem has escalated so much, Johnny, that it is going to need an intervention. But the kind of intervention comes from your local cities and counties. They need to send equipment, and it needs to be disposed of properly. That is not unhealthy. In fact, why would we let anybody live around and in that kind of squalor? It's dangerous. There are points where you really do have to step over discarded syringes. That's not a place where you want to walk the dog or anybody to technically go for a walk with your kids, let's say. So I'm going to challenge local governments to make a concentrated effort to go out there and clean it up. If this was on an industrial or a business property, the business owner would have already been reprimanded and that would have been remedied. But because there's some forgiveness that's allowed, don't allow it. Because if you allow people to live in squalor like that, you can only guarantee it will get worse and not better until you intervene.
I got a text message. Walmart announced the closing of stores recently. Do we have any guarantee Walmart will not close down so we don't end up with a bridge to an empty building?
Well, you know, you never know what a private sector business model is going to do. And in this case, Walmart has closed stores, but some of them were in what you would say already heavy, saturated areas where there were multiple Walmarts. Obviously, when you come through Central Park area and pop into Aberdeen, there's the big store right there. But it's kind of the only one, and maybe that increases the chances alone that that market would survive. But there again, I don't know. I don't know their loss, profit loss. I do know that when I go out back of that store, I always see a lot of what you call discarded shoplifting tags. Obviously, that store is hit and plagued with crime, you know, stealing. And the evidence is out back where people simply shoplift and take the tags and the markers off and throw them out back along the trail along that beautiful Chehalis River. So if the store's still profitable and it's the only one, I would say fingers crossed it should stay there.
Another question texted in. What would happen if we did away with the needle exchange program altogether? We're feeding this problem with free needles and easily accessible drugs.
Well, Johnny, I actually have been in the needle exchange. I used to pick up needles and go into the exchange down there. And it's no problem to exchange needles. The problem is they're... Obviously, we are giving out many more needles, many more than we receive back. If you know, the credibility, I'm telling you, I've walked amongst it just last Saturday. Just go down to the H Street and State and walk down an area, and you will begin to see the end caps, the bright orange end caps, and then you'll begin to see the hundreds and hundreds of fully intact used syringes that were used. And I don't want people to touch those because fentanyl and other things like that you can get just with touching them. Now, I've been trained in pathogen reduction, but no, I'll tell you, if the needle exchanges, there's nothing wrong maybe with the needle exchange as long as you're equal. You exchange for, if you give out two, then you better get two back instead of the hundreds that you now see discarded in that part of town. And that's creating a blight. It creates an additional health hazard for the entire community. So harm reduction, nah, not when the harm is obvious and now the harm is exposed to every citizen that would venture in that area.
So your big bill, well, you have a few big bills, but this one, the deterring catalytic converter thefts, Senate Bill 5740, how's that looking?
This bill will get voted on today in a committee in the Senate called Law and Justice. It's a big bill, Johnny. It's a technical bill. It's a policy bill. It's a huge bill. And the only reason it's even still alive is because it's necessary to implement the budget. So it's not just a policy bill, because we were done with those on the 17th of last month. So what's at stake here is this creates actually a new crime. A gross misdemeanor for walking around with a catalytic converter that doesn't have the VIN number, the last eight digits marked in it permanently. It also takes a swipe at organized crime. Those in the business of handling catalytic converters, there's some paperwork requirement, some licensing requirement, some auditing requirements. It's going to get a little trickier for the black market or the organized crime to get away with it. In fact, this bill I'm so proud of because it gives local police the right to actually confront somebody and say, where'd you get that catalytic converter? Because the crime's too fast to catch, Johnny. If you can sawzall somebody's catalytic converter off in 60 seconds or less, the chances of catching them and confronting them, they're hard to do. So this bill gives our police a little bit more time. And, you know, I'm really happy that it's coming because on March 15th, Washington State reported its largest catalytic crime ring, converter theft ring, located in Kennewick, was announced on the 15th of March. There were businesses involved. This was very organized. And they recovered over 533 stolen catalytic converters that came from everyday people cars like yours and mine. It was a huge bust. My bill couldn't be more timely.
Well, hopefully they're not just let off scot-free, which seems like the case usually lately.
And that's the beauty of this bill. This one actually adds crime, which is very rare in a progressive or a Democrat-controlled Senate and House. It's rare to get new crimes, but this one creates a new gross misdemeanor for the offense, and it also creates a B and C felony, Johnny.
Ooh.
For those businesses that handle converters improperly. So, you know, I've made every effort to hold the thieves, I guess, in this case, whether they're organized or just a singular person trying to scam some money, I want them to be accountable. I mean, enough damage. Every 2 hours, a catalytic converter is reported stolen, even though we know that the number is much higher. But we're on track to have another record-breaking catalytic converter theft hit our state. And this gets everybody. It hits the hardworking Washington citizens, everybody on up. It's not an elite crime. It hurts all of us that need our cars just to go to work or school.
Okay, another text regarding the needle exchange. Who should be held accountable for the uneven exchange?
Well, it's really a couple of methods. It's the policy. In other words, what are the rules that govern the exchange? So if the rules aren't being handled properly, then whoever administers those rules needs that accountability. And then the people the physical organization that is actually doling these out, they can do a better effort to go get them or to ask for them on the spot. There's nothing wrong with asking to exchange. There is some benefit to harm reduction. But again, if you're giving out tenfold what you ever receive or you ever get picked up off the ground, then you're just polluting your community. And that's unfair. It may offend people, but it's the truth. You can go down, anybody can go down right now, and go to those areas, and you will see hundreds of needles. What I'm trying to do is create that awareness, is keep your program if you want, but clean up your act in the field. Nobody deserves that, and that includes the most vulnerable, the homeless community. They don't deserve to also live around that. I don't see any Sharps containers down there. I didn't see anybody picking anything up except myself, and of course, you mentioned a citizen, a council person for Aberdeen, Casey Ann Morrison. She has been routinely going down there, but one person isn't enough. It's time that the community rallies and says, this is how we don't want to live, regardless of our status in this community.
An email, where does the trash and needle and garbage, the citizens' fault, like when is there going to be accountability for the people causing the garbage? We're all working and have responsibilities of our own, than to take our time to go out and pick up somebody's trash that could care less about this community.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big, bold question that says, how do we change somebody else's attitude? In other words, if you care about something and somebody else doesn't, how do you convince them to do it? Well, the first thing I'm going to say is you do have to lead by example. I think it breaks my heart to say, unfortunately, myself and others that take the time to go pick up garbage, we shouldn't have to, but we still need to, so that we can confront and lead by example and say, hey, as you're watching me pick up this garbage, why can't you help me do it? Why can't the community get behind this? And, you know, instead of hiding it under some part of the problem and saying that, you know, this is a side effect of it, the beautiful Chehalis River does not need to be further polluted. And I have seen used needles actually floating down the river when the tide's going out towards the beautiful ocean. And that alone, if you don't think that doesn't affect you, it should affect you. And so we need to create the awareness that, yeah, it affects you. This is bad for everybody, the environment, yourself, the future. And you know what? We do need to make some confrontations on this issue. Quit. It's getting worse, not better.
Text, I read that mushrooms are on the way to being legalized like CBD. Care to comment?
Well, let's just call them what they are. Shrooms, penicillicybic mushrooms, they are on the way in the form of a study group. The intention was to study this. Will it be beneficial to those that, say, suffer some form of PTSD? And if I did that right, on the acronym of the post-traumatic stress. The Senate passed it. It is looking like there could be a study that will come out to say, is there a beneficial use for treatment for that? I would not, and I'm not going to support that to ever be available retail and to be at your local store to pick up along with a gallon of milk. It is a very serious chemical. And yet, of course, the majority has the votes to pass it, whether I like it or not.
Right. Comment. Let's see. We continue to clean up after the homeless at our property, but after we clean up, we have to clean up the property over and over and over again. It gets tiring.
You know what? For those folks that endure that, because it's not just to say that to easy to cast blame, it's the homeless, but there are so many victims, and one of them are up nearby and adjacent property owners, private property owners, or in this case, public property, where we're being victimized with this very naughty and not healthy discarded drug paraphernalia, needles. It's not good. And I tell people that are getting to the point where they tell us, well, I'm tired of it. It shouldn't be this way. They're right. But what I ask them to do is to act on it, to take pictures, document what you've done, and then share your story. And, of course, you do need to share it, even though at times it seems like it's deaf ears. Never give up. Continue to share it with your local leaders and elected. And because eventually, if people don't listen, then you get another shot, say, with electeds. I was very clear in my campaign, and you can check me out on my Facebook page. I spent a lot of time picking up garbage and needles, and I spent a lot of time taking pictures of it because I don't want to cover it up. I want to expose it. We need to have a more adult conversation on how to make Aberdeen, for example, more beautiful. It is a beautiful community, but right now it's got some very obvious, these are right in front of you, obvious problems. Why aren't we tackling those instead of using an excuse to say, well, it's allowed? It should never be allowed, regardless of who you are. An addiction is not an excuse to pollute that beautiful area.
Agreed. Let's see. Hold on here. I'm loading the text. It's good to hear that we have a 19th district representative in possession of brains. All right.
I appreciate that. Listen, Article 1, Section 1, I am not the boss, Johnny. I work for the district. And part of that is to tell the truth. And these are things I've seen with my own two eyes. It's a first-person experience. I didn't read about it in a brochure, and I didn't fall for a story someplace. I've actually taken the time to go walk through these communities. And you can learn more by just, well, as a politician, which is where shut and be quiet and open up your eyes and your brain, and it's right there. I'm not afraid to say it. It doesn't make me the most popular person at times, but I'm not trying to offend people. I'm simply reporting what to me is known as the truth, and we can do a lot better job rather than, say, enable. We need to enable improvement, not enable an existence that's happening in certain parts of that town. That's the wrong way, because that problem will grow. We don't need a bigger problem.
Where do we send photos? I do take photos of all the garbage and destruction of our property, according to an email.
Absolutely. You know, you can send those photos to any public agency, which includes the police, but most important, your local governments, those that have the power making decisions. So that includes everything from the county to your local cities and boards and commissions. And you know what else? Get it on the radio. I mean, you can't see it, but you talk about it. So what? Then go to a media, like social media. Not to put things on trial, but to explain to what you see, share what you see, share what you go through. You know, we call it in Olympia lived experiences. Well, share your lived experiences of picking up disgusting trash in a beautiful community as you see the drug problem getting worse. That's a clear message that I guess our public leadership needs to intervene on a more detailed basis and balance the scale here.
All right. Someone texted, do you take calls on phone interviews? Nope, can't, because he's on the phone. Well, we have less than a minute. Anything you would like to wrap this up with?
Well, for those that, you know, we're all talking about my actions in Olympia, and I'm proud to serve the 19th. However, sine die, which is the end of our session, of our 105-day long session, Johnny, it's coming pretty quick. We've only got like four more weeks, and we're done. Last week, we passed the capital budget. Tomorrow, in the Senate, we'll be voting on the operating budget, and then the week after that, we're going to be taking on the transportation budget. So it's still a matter of stay tuned. Nothing's over in Olympia till it's really over as we get through these votes. And we're also hearing each other bills. The House is hearing the Senate, and the Senate is hearing the House. There was about 290 bills or so that each of us got. So we'll be have some floor action this Wednesday and Friday, and until we vote it all out and see if we're going to make a difference or not.
Senator Wilson, 19th Legislative District, thanks for spending time with me and giving us an update.
Thank you, Johnny. I look forward to talking again.